Jesus chose three disciples to join him up a mountain for prayer. It must be an honor to be chosen. How special they must feel to be given this time with Jesus alone, personal. With all the walking and teaching and the crowds following everywhere, it's a wonder Jesus would even think of them to consider sharing this time with them. These three, they follow him up a mountain, which we all remember is where God appears to humanity. Right? Remember, God appears to Moses most famously with those tangible tools, a bush, a stick, some tablets. The mountain is where God appears. And when God appeared one of those times that Moses climbed a mountain, when they were leaving Egypt behind, Moses was worried they wouldn't know where to find God. He thought they'd be lost in the wilderness without God. And still God came to them at night as fire, in the day as cloud. And in these forms, God went with them out of Egypt and into the dangerous wilderness. Fire and cloud. It wasn't that long ago that we had the tongues of fire and the presence of God, the Holy Spirit in our midst in the Pentecost. We remember God in the fire, right? But do we remember God in the cloud, in the dark storm clouds above, in the thunder and the lightning? Do we remember God is even with us? So they go up the mountain with Jesus. They may have thought of things like these, but probably not. I know they didn't think of the mountaintop gurus and holy men like we do, perched at the peak, cross-legged and wise, quiet, listening for God in the silence of exclusion, alone. And we tramps up there, the rambunctious seekers, coming to him for wisdom, right? It's always a hymn, too. Coming to him for wisdom and, of course, seeking answers to life's burning questions. What is the meaning of life? What am I supposed to do with it? And all the prattling on we do because we're scared to think, too scared to know the truth that the answer is already there with us because we've already read and ignored it. Love. That can't be it. So we've come to get certainty from God. And the man up there, this guru at the top of the mountain, once lost in solitude, and a big smile breaks the stone of his face, and he simply says, "You know it already. Search your heart. Find it like I have in your being with me now." Right? Something like that. We go to these mountaintops because these are places of encounter with the divine, and we know to look for it there. But do we find it there? These three disciples were looking for a special teaching, this alone time with Jesus, and they received instead an encounter, an opportunity to learn something completely different. An encounter with God, with themselves. And if they have eyes to see and ears to hear, they'll learn from it, right? Light dazzles and obscures Jesus' face. It says that he is transfigured, right? But what does that even mean? We know that prefix trans from the word transform, to change from one thing to another, right? So to transfigure is to change appearance. So we like to think of that as just changing the paint on the chair, right? It looks different, but the chair is the same fundamentally. But that doesn't get at what else is happening here. Change is happening. It's not just appearing to happen. It is happening. Change that is visual, but fundamentally imperceptible. It's somehow something radically changed and yet feels entirely the same. Now, this is for me like the Eucharist. If you eat that bread before it's blessed and eat one after, they taste the same, but we know they're not. Like the substance, the molecules, the parts which make up that bit of bread are still the same. It's all there. And yet, it's different. It doesn't go back to what it was before. It has the same parts, but it's a new thing. When we're changed, you don't really look all that different with a new haircut. But we can be changed beyond that. And in the middle of all of this, Moses and Elijah come, right? And somehow the three disciples know who they are. These three figures that just appear out of nowhere, they know them. They don't question how they got there. They don't probably have time. They're there. Maybe they have name tags. Maybe that one in the red and the green has on a name tag that says, "Hello, my name is Elijah," and it's written in black Sharpie. Or maybe he wants color-code that Sharpie. Moses, they could tell straight off, because the light is pointing out of his head in that familiar way. So they can tell Moses a mile away. Elijah, they need a name tag. This is the mountaintop. And this experience has Peter freaked, like in a good way, not freaked out in a bad way. Like, it cannot get any better. Right? You know he cannot contain himself. This is the best experience of his life, right? So, of course, he has to document it. So he takes out his phone, right? And he needs to get the right picture so he can Instagram it, hashtag blessed. And that's when God shows up. That's perfect, isn't it? Right? Jesus doesn't have to be the bad guy saying, "Come on, Peter. Get behind me, Satan. You're doing it again." God doesn't give Jesus the chance. God interrupts this foolish suggestion. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them. Right? The cloud overshadowed them. Above them, it cast its shadow upon them. And they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Notice the cloud did not come upon them or surround them or overtake them. They entered the cloud. Despite the fear, the terror overtaking them, they entered the cloud. There's no way that the disciples thought the mountaintop experience would be like this. The joy and excitement over the presence of Moses and Elijah is cut and drawn from them in an instant as the terrifying storm, the cloud, came into their midst. And they faced it. They entered it. They weren't petrified, stupefied, like from Medusa's gaze of evil. This is facing the power of God. And they've done it before. Back in the boat with the storm raging, and there's Jesus, right? He calms the storm. They were terrified then too. They gawked in horror, realizing Jesus isn't just some faith healer. There is an encounter with God here. And up here on the mountain, at the doorstep of heaven, they see the face of God, and they enter into it. Terrified of what they'll find, but they step forward nonetheless into the darkness. And there God speaks, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." And then poof, gone. They're once again alone with Jesus on the mountain. He doesn't speak. The teaching is over. There's no guru to seek in isolation, but there is God, now disappeared. Jesus is different to them now, even more than before, different, powerful, tied to the divine somehow, like Moses and Elijah, but different. They couldn't explain it to the others if they tried. I don't know if they even look at each other, right? If it's that knowing silence as they depart with exchanged glances, sort of like, or if they don't want to look at each other. My guess is that Jesus just started walking, and their jobs as disciples is to follow him, right? That's what they do. The silent descent from the mountain is pregnant. Hope and possibility come down with them. They don't yet grasp how they couldn't stay there, up the mountain, living in God's house, the temple at the top, alone, away from their community and away from the world. And they don't realize mountaintops aren't for staying or living on, only visiting God on that sacred ground. They have light blinding their eyes to see and a booming voice ringing in their ears to hear. And they're listening to Jesus in the silence, his breathing, stepping on rocks, the way his feet impact the earth. Do you think they know that God doesn't stay there? That God is with them on this descent between them? That God was with the others, left alone at the bottom to wait? Do they know that yet? No tents, houses, or temples for our mountaintops. There can be nothing so permanent, precious, or safe. They must come down and join their friends and the crowds. There's work ahead of them there. Their work of following, listening, restoring the world where God is already.